When Ebola jumped from the remote wilderness of West Africa to population centers, the Liberian capital city of Monrovia found itself at the center of a crisis. The region has had more than 6,000 cases, 50 new every day. How does critical information get to the people who need it in an epidemic of this magnitude, with a disease this deadly? Brooke Gladstone, host of On the Media, went to Monrovia to see firsthand as the journalists at Front Page Africa try to fight ignorance with modern medicine and hysteria with hard facts. As she discovered, it's a battle between the messages of journalism and the messages of the government.
The media have actually felt quite a bit on the sidelines. There was an effort earlier by President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf to suspend certain articles of the Constitution, including those that relate to free speech. She was voted down by her bicameral legislature, but it was a real warning shot to the media, and there have been, over the last few months, several efforts to close people down, to intimidate them. They say that the media, if they don't stick with the program, could be endangering public safety. Obviously, the media take a very different point of view.
And, you know, the issue of hysteria is not one that's confined to West Africa. We've had it here in the United States. Part of this entire story, though, is about information flow in terms of what will help stem the crisis. Relief agencies get into the affected areas? What are you seeing?
Well, the information flow actually at this point is not too bad, John. I mean, everybody seems to understand what safety measures are necessary. Everywhere you go, well, I won't say everywhere, everywhere in the city of Monrovia, there's a bucket of water with a spigot full of, you know, it's basically chlorinated water that you rub your hands, and then if you go into a public building, they take your temperature. It's so routine, it feels as normal as flashing an ID. Now, when you get outside the city, you have roads, some of which are just impassable. We went to a hot spot where there had been a recent flare-up where, you know, it literally takes 2 days sometimes first to find an ambulance and then to get it through. It's mostly just four-wheel drive vehicles and motorbikes that can make it. So there are really different Liberias we're talking about here. Some are well in hand and some are still very much endangered. And the CDC just said the other day in a press conference that they're finding 50 new cases a day. Now, that's way down from over 150 a day, but it used to be all pretty much focused in just a couple of counties. Now they can be found in nearly every county.
We've heard so much about the lack of medical infrastructure in West Africa. Monrovia is a large city with a concentrated population. Yet we're also seeing, and it sounds like what you have observed, is the creation of a parallel infrastructure to try to hold things together that includes those chlorinated buckets. What are people creating to fill the void of the medical infrastructure that we're told is non-existent in so many places?
Right. Actually, though, those buckets that we're talking about are considered part of the infrastructure now, not a replacement for. These are part of best practices now in Monrovia and every other place in the entire country. Now, the medical infrastructure is truly horrible, but as the information minister claimed, it used to be before the president came into office, this particular president, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, that 7 out of 10 Liberians had no access to medical support within an hour's walk. And now it's a third of Liberians that have no access to health between health services within an hour's walk. So I guess that's a big improvement. I mean, in this country, if we said a third of Americans couldn't find any access to health, you know, within a short space, it would be pretty shocking.
As we've observed in places around the world, there's always a kind of life goes on story that's happening, even though we're talking about a place that's in a crisis. How are people just basically getting from day to day?
You know, the big fear that I've read in the papers, including the paper that we've been shadowing this week, arguably the best paper in Liberia called Front Page Africa, the biggest fear is that of complacency. All of this has become kind of the new normal. But then on the street, you see people, maybe three people on a single motorbike, sleeveless people. We were in an open debate forum where there were literally hundreds of people crammed into a really tiny space as they observed themselves sweating profusely over each other so that they could discuss whether or not it was a good idea to put off the election because of the possible exposure to Ebola standing in an election line. So you can see there's a certain amount of cognitive dissonance that's going on.
Is the international aid effort seen as a rescue operation? Is it seen as neocolonialism? How is that being viewed by the people in Monrovia?
The people in Monrovia, the ones that I've met on the street, the ones I've met in the hotels, they always say thank you. They're very grateful. But the government feels very differently about the aid programs. They have, the Liberian government, the president herself, has complained of what seems to be a kind of neo-colonialism. Meanwhile, the aid agencies, cognizant of the missing millions, have begun to set up their own parallel structures to serve the people outside the government. And that, of course, is a source of no little consternation within her administration. So there's growing tension there, but that is that's in the political arena, not so much on the street. On the street, it's just a question of why can't there be more ambulances? Why can't these hospitals deal with this situation? And of course, the Médecins Sans Frontières group, the Doctors Without Borders, have been doing a wonderful job from the beginning, but there are local clinics who have been working as well, and there isn't a lot of sharing of information among those various medical outfits.
Some of the saddest photographs I've ever seen have come out of this crisis. How are those images coming to life in the stories you're being told about the fatalities and the inability to help so many people?
The pictures that we see in real life are the ones that are out in the countryside. I haven't even posted them, of just orphans. There are huge numbers of orphans. There are just lots and lots of children. There are others who are quarantined to the extent that they don't have free access to food, and people just sort of leave it out in front of their house and then they, run away, understandably so. So, and then you see houses made of mud, mat walls, no electricity, no running water, no toilets, but Ebola attacks them vigorously if they aren't hooked up with the information system and if they don't understand what they need to do. So that sort of dissemination of information is still going on. It's getting out there. It isn't entirely out there. And as I said, there are still 50 cases a day.
Brooke Gladstone, host and managing editor of On the Media, reporting from Monrovia, Liberia.